Hey, what's up, y'all? This is John Ryan Cantu, and this is the JRC Podcast. Thank you for joining me on another episode. Today, I'm talking to four awesome dudes. Sammy Rodriguez is from the Bay Area, California, born and raised. He spent some time here in Houston a couple years ago where I got to meet him for the first time. He's an awesome guy. And so he was in town. We planned on getting lunch together, and I said, dude, just come be on my podcast. And so we got lunch afterwards. But he stopped by and he brought some other friends of ours, Abel Hadeville, who's been on the podcast before. I've known him for many, many years since we were kids. Awesome, awesome man of God, pastor, church planter, well connected. I mean, we call him the mayor of Houston. And then also Jared Darby, who I had the pleasure of meeting. This was the second time meeting him. And I love this guy's heart and the way that he speaks and the way that he's so passionate about the things of God. So we've had a really good conversation, full house today. I hope that you enjoy the show. So let's get into it.
What are we talking about?
Just life,
bro. You know
what questions do you have for Sammy?
I don't have any questions, bro.
No. But
questions.
This is the best because we just get to have conversations.
That's right.
Yeah.
Check. Don't have the good mic, so you're gonna have to be like right on.
Hey,
andale. There you go. Yeah. No. I so before when we started the podcast back in 2019, and you were on it a couple times.
Yeah.
So I had it very, very structured. I would send out questions. I had basically an agenda, right? So yep. A topic for every show. That's how I roll.
Yep.
I'm more of a naturally, like in a social setting.
Yeah.
I'm socially awkward. I'm not good with small talk. Mm. I need structure. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? I need to know where I'm going.
Where are we going?
So yeah. I'm taking a big risk, with these types of, with this conversation, cause it's just really organic, you know,
smart. I
and
love
so
it.
So if it sucks, it sucks.
I know Jared has a comment about that.
You got the right one. That's all he did.
What? Small talk?
No. His ability to move without structure. Oh. He like get out of the street.
Well, it's like what does Bruce Lee say? Be water.
Be like, what?
Be like water.
Be like water.
Takes any form.
As long as there's movement in the conversation, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, starting point, and then
agreed,
and then I mean, the conversation kind
of. Is this for the leadership podcast you have?
No, it's not.
It's not
leading anymore. It's JRC podcast.
Just you conversating.
Yep.
Awesome. I love it, bro.
Just with guy. Which,
good. And the people that have been listening have been kind of the people from the church.
No,
friends.
It's been the same. It's been, well, I think it's been the same audience as before. So, I mean, the podcast was doing, it was doing great, man. I was excited, but 2020 just kind of took a turn. I mean, everybody experienced the same thing. And then we had some personal loss in our family and I couldn't focus on it anymore, but I always wanted to bring it back.
Yeah.
Now is probably the worst time to do it. Cause I think I'm more busy than I was before.
Sure. Wow.
But, I'm just.
Have we are we rolling right now?
We're rolling.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I love it. I'll just say this. First off, thanks for having me and us. You know how we roll. You hit me up and then we're like, hey, let's bring the homies together and have a conversation. And I would say, I talked to you about, you know, my boy in California doing it. And then also obviously there's goats like, you know, Rogan and others where you just have conversation. So I think it's like you said, it's taking risk. But it's worth it just to see where the conversation flows. So I'm honored. You're in your PhD, you just told me, right?
I am.
Taking a PhD. What are you studying again?
It's biblical exposition. So it's hermeneutics. Wow.
What are you studying right? What are you working on right now? Your paper?
And
your dissertation? What are you doing?
Right now, I'm in the course is, so it's the former prophets. So Old Testament prophets.
Let's go.
And it's just mind blowing, bro.
So
but,
cool.
But it's also lonely. Like being in PhD is lonely. You can't just talk about Deuteronomic history with your friends, you know, like, no, like who cares, you know?
You know who I want to connect you to have on this, who would be great? Andrew Hurd. You know Andrew?
Yeah.
He's doing his PhD right now as well.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay. In what?
He's working on transition, like his project, instead of it being a dissertation, I think it's like they have to work on a project. I'll connect you guys. Okay. I know you probably already know him, but he would be a great person to go in.
Yeah.
Abe's coming in and out. He's got, you know, his family.
He's
Latino. He's
got his kids here.
Yeah. But
it's all good. Yeah. No, it's been fun, man. It's just, it's a lot. It's a lot of reading. It's a lot of writing. And then on top of that, you know, prepping a sermon, you know, every week and then just being a pastor, you know, it's a lot, man. So, I mean, I've almost quit like several times, but
yeah,
I'm going to try to get through it, man.
I love it, man.
But what about you guys, man? What do you, Well, first of all, what are you doing in town? Because you're not from here.
Yeah. Is this good enough? Like, yeah, levels are good? Okay. So for everyone in the, what is the podcast?
JRC Podcast.
JRC Podcast. What's up, squad? If you're listening to me, hello. If you're watching us, hello. So I'm Sammy Rodriguez from the Bay Area, originally in California. Lived in Southern California. Now, you know, it's pretty much home. Moved here actually to Houston. I mean, you know this. Yeah. I'll tell you, the listeners. You know, usually California to Texas. First off, my dad was born in El Paso, even though that's kind of edge, Texas. So I got roots. And then my daughter, who's a year and a half, our oldest right now. We only have one. Well, I mean, yeah, we have one and we're working on second. She was born here. So that kind of gave us street cred for Houston. And we were able to be here for, we had a native.
Is she repping Astros and all that?
Yeah. I mean, we're Giants fans. You know, in the Bay.
I'm sorry.
I don't hate the Astros though. When they cheated that one year, but everyone kind of cheats. I get it. But I'll tell you this. The Astros won when we were in town.
That's right.
I was gonna say when you moved here, they won the World
Series.
They've won two. So
they won two. Don't forget like Sammy.
They cheated that one, and then they won the one. The legitimate one was when Pippa, our daughter, was born, and then we moved, and then they lost.
Pippa's an H-town queen. You're not gonna be able to forget
She's
that.
100%
born here.
So too long of an intro, but I was able to work with churches and nonprofits. That's how we met.
Yeah, yeah.
By serving the city of Houston.
We met through Abe.
So of course. He's the mayor of Houston.
Yeah, Abe is a connector.
Hands down. Yeah. Not even close.
What was that?
He's the mayor of Houston.
Yeah, he is. Everybody knows Abe, man.
We have a new mayor named John Whitmire. That's his name.
Look, he knows. That's crazy that he knows. We didn't know.
Well, I remember you saying once, you said, I don't know who said it, of Abe. They said, like, you're the whole network or something like that.
He's the plug.
Yeah. He's the plug. He's the man. Like, That's you, man. I don't know.
He is.
How did that become? How did you become well connected? Because I mean, back in our day, you know, I think our circle was pretty small. What was that moment where you were? I don't know.
That's a good question. I think the biggest thing would probably be, I grew up in an atmosphere where collaboration was not a thing, and it was like us, we going to heaven, they not. We doing it right. They're not.
Yeah. Right.
Us.
And by we, what do you mean? Like denominationally?
For me, it was denominationally speaking, But for someone else, it could have been just the context you grew up in. I don't know.
Right.
If you went to the Church of Scientology, that might have been like, yo, this is it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, whatever your context is. But for me, it was a specific group of people that were like, hey, this is the way. Actually, anything out of this might not be the way. And I was just like, I don't know that that's how it should be. Would read scripture, obviously, and see that obviously it was meant for the world to have the message of Jesus, not just for one specific denomination or people group. So I think that's where it stemmed from. And then also feeling like an outcast. I preached about it this morning. Feeling like I really couldn't fit in anywhere. So I'm like, where am I going to land? I have no idea. So let's try everything. Hey, what do you do? Oh, great. You can breathe. I can breathe too. Let's go and be friends together. You know, it was like, it sounds silly, but it really was. How do I find common things with everybody? Then it turned into, because I would ask people, hey, why do you consider me someone who connects you? And they would ultimately end up saying, well, it's because you have no agenda when you meet with me. Wow. You're authentically just meeting me where I am. And if you so happen to invite me to something, you say, it's okay if I don't show up. So I think that's how it started. But it really was me going kind of against what I saw growing up and saying, no, I think we can be friends with people that don't necessarily look like us, sound like us, or even believe like us.
Yeah.
I think that's where it started for sure.
That's good.
How did that affect relationships with people who were more like, internal?
Oh yeah. It was hard.
Yeah.
It was hard. I think they felt betrayed. I think they felt like, they told me they felt like I was more concerned about other people than I was about them who raised me.
Wow.
Now this is my people group, right? This is our church, our village that was like, hey, like, why are you playing drums at the Methodist church? Why are you playing drums? And I'm like, because they're people and they love Jesus and they have different practices, but ultimately they love Jesus and their heart is there. And matter of fact, they actually show me some Christian qualities that I haven't seen in any other people groups. So I started to learn about the Baptists, right? I was hired at a Baptist church as a youth pastor. Grew up Pentecostal, aka crazy, right? Come on. And crazy cool, right?
That's right.
But yeah, so I think definitely felt like there was this a betrayal, and they voiced it after a while and said, we just felt like you kind of left what brought you up. And I was just like, it wasn't that. Let me give you my context. I felt like we were limiting what God could do through our city together versus just our church, just our people group.
And I'll say this, like, of Abe. So when I came in, we moved, my wife and I, when my wife was pregnant in 2022. So we met in January, right in the beginning. Wally's in the room too. I met him like the first time. And Abe, I would say Abe's agenda is the city. So that's his agenda. He wants to reach, what is it, Greater Houston, eight plus million.
Yep.
And so that's always been his heart. And so, and then he's also a natural connector, and then being Latino, but then with his skill set of music, being a musician has gotten him in the rooms at different places. And so I think one thing, so that's where, when I met Abe, we're so similar in the place where that's what I've done everywhere I go with Circuit Riders, other things I've helped build. So I was like, man, I have the same value as that. And that's where we connected, and we're like, hey, we just want to see the city reached and in whatever way we can.
JR, can I ask this question? You guys both are insanely gifted at building social networks. I was on a phone call yesterday. I do this monthly with my spiritual director, and he gave me this. He said, "In your 20s, it's hustle because you want somebody to give you an opportunity. It's like, coach, put me in the game. I really want to be there. And then in your 30s, he said, you're busier than ever and you can't help it because you got little kids and you're trying to make a name." He said, but in your 40s, if you do it right, you will find the jet stream of your calling. And the only thing that will fuel it is your social network. He actually used a quote from John Osteen. Pastor John Osteen used to say, when you find a divine flow, when you meet somebody and there's a divine flow, you just jump in it. Like when you meet somebody and y'all have that connection like y'all have. For some people, it's not as easy to naturally find that divine flow. So maybe could you just reach out and tell us, like, how do y'all create these expansive social networks without feeling like, you know, those people at conferences when they're like talking to you, but they're looking for somebody big time to meet?
Yeah, they're looking past you. They're looking to you as a stepping stone.
But you do have to connect with big guys. You guys are both very connected. So how, what's the balance? How do people connect with those guys but still keep it genuine?
Well, I was going to say this too. Like, that's a great question. I was going to say this. So it's like, agenda's the city. And then to what you said is, I think a lot of people always say, man, how did you, so like, let's say, same example. Like I, with my group with Circuit Riders, I train up all our communicators on evangelism, sharing the gospel on the streets, one-on-one. And a lot of people would come up to me and ask me, same flow, other side of the coin, where they say, hey, pray for me for boldness to do this, to step out. And we always want that like quick prayer and then it activates versus stepping out into it and exercising that muscle. So earlier we were having coffee, we were talking, and we were just joking about, you know, hitting the gym. We're all in our, we're all in our 30s, right? All of us. And so we're trying to fight the dad bod always, you know.
Amen.
I feel like it's like we want to look good, we want the quick fix of the gym, but it takes time like to build muscle. In the same way, well, with evangelism, I can't pray for someone to receive an anointing of work that I've put in for hours and hours and hours that people don't see. You just got to take a step out. So when you're asking the question, how do you build those networks? One, I think it's intentionally like valuing the person in front of you. Whether they're a pastor of 10,000, 1,000, 100, or not even a pastor at all. Just valuing that person in front of you. And then one of the things that I value and that I've seen from Abe, and Abe will speak for himself, is we want to leave someone better than, you know, or a room better than we found it. And there's this famous quote, I'm gonna hijack it. It's either Nelson Mandela or someone famous, where it says, you know, people are gonna forget your words but not forget how you treated them. And I feel like that's always the goal. Do I do it great? No, not at all. Not always, you know, I'm very intense. If you do Enneagram, I'm an 8-7. If you don't do that, if you think it's witchcraft, that's fine. Me too.
Interestingly enough, I think he is too. He won't take the test because he said he's Pentecostal and he's Latino.
Yeah, for sure.
Which means he's superstitious about everything. He won't let his kids watch Coco.
Don't let them know
that my kids have watched it before. They're like, Day of the Dead, we don't watch it. Okay, that's
fair. They're singing the song.
But he's definitely, I feel like he's an 8-7.
I can see it.
Interesting that you said
I've never
that.
Taken it. I can see it.
No.
Like, are
the the greatest network builders, 8-7s? Because you guys, haven't even seen.
And then I would say this, I'll kick it to you, is I think it's just, you know, valuing the people in front of you and just saying, hey, what do I have for you? Mm. And it doesn't always work out where we're going to do everything at the same time.
Right.
And then one of the things that Abe and I did was when I first got here for this project, we just said, okay, let's write down everyone we know. Let's just go spend time with them. Mm-hmm. Let's grab a moment with them. And that's when we sat down. So that's what I would say. What do you think?
I mean, I've been here for 35 years. So yeah. I feel like my prayer since a kid has been, send us people. Like, I know it's a trashy city. Mm-hmm. It's a ghetto city. It's ugly. All the things. It's hot. Right? I always talk about the incredible things, but let's talk about the reality of
the
homeless community. Let's talk about the reality of the crime rate. Mm-hmm. It's crazy here. It's crazy. I see it, but it's not like I'm accepting it. Mm-hmm. It is me saying, I believe for more. God, send us the workers.
Wow.
So my prayer has always been that. So for me, like when I met Sammy, Sammy's like, hey, I'm going to come. We want to connect the city, be a part of what God is already doing. It wasn't like we were coming to bring our agenda. Yeah. It was like,
that's right.
So I was like, dope, we've been working. Come alongside me. What are you doing in 90 minutes?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And he's like, I guess I'm going with you. The rest is history.
Yep.
We've been boys, brothers for a year and a half now. Like,
yep.
He didn't leave my side, was with me every day.
Yep.
Literally.
Yeah, we were rolling
hours
together.
Hours upon hours praying for pastors in the city on how to best serve them. Matter of fact, their event for Love Has No Limits is done. Yeah. But yet Sammy's back to check in on the people of the city. Like, that's a brother to me. Yeah. So he was ready to work. And then leading into, I don't want to take away from where we're going, but just leading into like Jared, same thing. When I meet Jared, Pastor Jared, we talk about he's born and raised here. He's been all over the country, incredibly gifted when it comes to preaching, people, just his insight, his style, the way that he is, incredible. Pastor's kid, which by the way, I'm a little biased for pastor's kids.
Yeah, for sure.
I do love pastor's kids because I know they've seen it all.
That's right.
Heard it all.
That's right.
Been through it all. And if they still choose to be in ministry,
it's
I'm
a
like,
big deal. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
You're my guy. Like, let's do it. So anyway, so meet Jared and same thing. I'm like, you ready to roll? He's like, yeah. Then he drives hours upon hours just to be at our culture nights, just to be at our event. Like one night he just showed up for a pop-up Sunday and I'm like, he's like, I got to head back tomorrow. So he did that intentionally every single time. I'm like, there's no other way. And this is for another podcast, but how we even came together that now we're church planning together.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And Sam, we were trying to get him to move back. Come on.
Hey, I'm there in the spirit. I'm getting you guys to all move to California.
Come on.
You guys. Come on, somebody. Come
so
on,
really, somebody. When I see people like a Sammy, like a Jared, it's an answered prayer that we've had to the Lord. Send people to serve the people of Houston.
So how has that been received among pastors in Houston?
The coal planning deal or?
No. So you guys, when you came, right?
Yep.
I remember I was a part of it. And I love the way that you guys did it because.
For sure.
At least outside looking in, you guys came in, you made real relationships with people. You sat down with them. You know, you guys sat down with me. You took me out to lunch.
Yeah.
We got to connect. There was no agenda. There was a quick like, hey, this is what we're doing.
Yep.
But it was establishing a good connection first, right?
Right.
And then afterwards, you bring everybody in the room. I remember you guys had
the pastors gathering. Yeah.
I want to say it was the largest.
Yeah, it was massive.
Pastors gathering in my lifetime. I think prior to me, probably John Osteen would have been something bigger.
For sure.
But
yeah. For sure.
In our lifetime, it was probably how many people were there? How many pastors? 700, maybe.
Maybe a little bit less than like 500, 600, somewhere around there. But it was a. One of the guys, keep asking questions, but Pastor Kevin Fellowship in Texas City, he told me, OG in the city, he just said he hasn't seen a pastor's gathering like that since Promise Keeper, OG Promise Keeper days.
Oh, sure, Promise Keeper.
And he just said the diversity of denomination and ethnic background, like it was really cool to be a part of, but keep going.
Well, that's the beautiful part because you brought the whole city together. But how was that received from... I guess the majority of pastors, were there pastors that went to the event and they're like, no, this is not for me.
Right.
I'm sure there was. Right?
Yeah,
I'm
for sure. Sure for sure.
I'm sure there's still in that kind of internal, that small circle that we were just talking about in the beginning. Mm. But I think I'm pretty encouraged to see a city of pastors that is kind of going, you know, beyond the denominations.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And we're working together for the greater good of our city, right? For the kingdom of God. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Growing up, I think it was a little bit more closed off where we created, you know, religions within the religion, you know. But now I don't see it that way. But I don't know. You guys had that hands-on experience.
I'll let Sammy start that off because he had fresh eyes.
I'll say this. One, I am blown away by the city of Houston. So first off, most people will know this, but I'll just say it. Houston is the most diverse city in America. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people will think, oh, maybe New York City, maybe some of these other... Houston is the number one.
Yeah.
It's the number one place for refugees landing in America is Houston. So you got the beauty of diverse, you got the nations, right? And again, my background is mission, so I'm a missionary kid slash kind of pastor kid. You know, that's why we got that connection. And so for Houston, man, I personally, being from California, I haven't seen a lot of cities that are like Houston that they work together cross-denominationally to serve the city. So that's we call it an original design. Mm-hmm. I think that's an original design of the city of Houston. And I know that out of chaos and crisis, like with Hurricane Harvey, I know that caused churches to work together. But yes, I think even before that, Houston is, it's funny because I think it was Billy Graham who said Houston's a hard city. Maybe he said tough it, maybe ground. Tough crowd.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel that. And maybe it's the timing of it, but I just saw that the church was willing and able. I think when you come in from the outside, well, there's two ways. We know God's doing stuff in the local church.
Right.
We know that 100%, he always is. The local church is the hope, right? It's Jesus and the church. But we know that God also does catalytic moments, Jesus' catalytic moments from the outside bringing in, right?
Yeah.
Like how Paul would travel and planting churches and people coming in. So for us, we knew that that was it. And then we made sure we had a spiritual advisory board that said, hey, we don't want to come into the city without the blessing from the city.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so it was well received. I think that, you know, everyone's busy. We're all doing our thing. So,
right.
But I would say on a majority level, I would say 90-95% was they were excited, stoked. There's varying levels of involvement, but our biggest thing was for me, and our organization that I work with currently, in those when we first moved, we want to do a listening tour, we call, where we just want to hear from the church, we want to hear from the city, and I don't want to assume what I know. I want to say, okay, how is this city different, and what can we learn? Mm-hmm. So even when we sat down with you. Like, and even on this moment, I'm like, man, I want to ask you more questions. What do you learn with the PhD?
Yeah.
What have you been learning these last few years with doing school and church and everything? And so I think being also Latino and being, you know, in that background, my dad's Puerto Rican Mexican, mom's American white. So I'm that mestizo, which is mixed. So even like you were sharing, always kind of like a square peg in a round hole, never feeling you're fitting, but being that bridge and that catalyst to bring people together. So I would say that was a big part, and people just were excited to hear what was happening. What would you say?
Yeah, I think it was well received. There's a lot of events and ministries that come to the city, and they say, this is our agenda, be a part. And what I loved about Love Has No Limits was, we do want to have a gathering for people to hear about Jesus. Can you guys help us navigate what that would look like for the city? It was a different approach. It was, yes, we're still having this large gathering, but also creating initiatives and bridges. I've met people that I didn't know in the city through Love Has No Limits. Sammy found out about an organization, said, hey, do you know these people? No, I had no idea. What? They're here that are long lasting. So they really did become a bridge to me personally, and I know a lot of pastors the same thing.
I think the key too is, I mean, it wasn't like an adoption model. It was a partnership model.
So right? great.
Very much so.
It was like, hey, we have this organization. We know how to do it. Let us tell you about your city, right? And then you can be a part of it if you want. I think that's where a lot of people just get a bad taste in their mouth. Because like,
totally.
You know, you like making these assumptions about the needs of other people. And I see this, you know, I work with Loving Houston.
Beautiful.
Loving Houston. Which is a organization that connects local churches to their local schools.
Yep.
And a lot of times the mindset with churches is like, we're going to adopt a school. We're going to give them all this stuff that they just assume that the school needs without actually having that conversation with some of them, sitting down, having real moments and learning from them. And I think that's what you guys did.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. What have been some of the lessons that you learned in that model with Loving Houston? What are some of the biggest lessons?
So that one's one of them is just learning how to think of the relationship as a partnership. That's number one. Like
listening.
A lot of churches are also under-resourced, like
for sure.
Like schools are.
For sure.
Wow. And so we have to realize that, you know, there's everybody's in need, right? It's not like we don't have we have all the answers, right? Mm-hmm. And so understanding people, really treating, so we've been in a partnership with the local school here at our church for about 3 years now. And that's how I got connected with Loving Houston was, was on that end. Incredible. And I'll be honest, man, at first I didn't really know how to do it. You know, I didn't, and I think a lot of churches, a lot of pastors don't really know how to do it. You know, they just think, okay, we're going to do a back to school drive. You know, they think in terms of like events, that's you know what I'm saying? Instead of long-term relationships. Wow. And so I think that is really what changed for us is when we stopped asking the question, what can we do? And we started asking the question of, how can we just be with, you know, how can we do partnership with them, relationship with them? And so now we have a great relationship with them. The contact that I have, they call the wraparound specialist. I send them a text message, you know, probably weekly. They know who we are. We know who they are. We'll go into the school. We'll drop off, you know, some stuff for the staff, and they'll say, "Hey, Pastor Ryan, what's up, Pastor Ryan? Hey, is you guys from Pneuma Church?" Like that's encouraging for us.
Yeah.
And over time, you know, I think everybody like a pastor, like the pitch is, okay, I'm going to partner with the school so I can get all their students and their families and we're going to grow our church. But like, if that's what you're going into thinking, like you're number one, it's probably not going to work out that way. And you're doing it for the wrong reasons. Right.
Yep.
Now we have seen some people come in
of course.
Because of the relationship that we've established, because they've seen that, you know, when we went there, we stayed there. We didn't just go there one day.
Sure.
And so we use for our Love Has No Limits. What was a One Day Houston?
Yeah.
I mean, we just kind of use already that model, that relationship that we already had with them.
So right? Beautiful.
We did a huge event with them.
Yep.
But we didn't like chunk deuce, nope. You know, after that
we're
day.
There.
Yeah. We're there.
And I think that's the big part is we want to have impact. And you said two things. One, it's easy to be like, I'm going to go there so their people will come here. Mm-hmm. But having the mindset of like, instead of gathering unto discipling, right? Why not go to where people gather?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that we're not going to disciple. That's what you do. That's what we do as a pastor, as a church. We're going to do that. But we're not going to assume that everyone is going to come there.
That's right.
Imagine this. Imagine if everyone from the school came to your church. You don't have space.
Yeah.
But the school has space for everyone that you could build long-term relationship and trust.
I'm curious to know, Pastor Jared, you just moved back to town. How long has it been? A couple months, right? That you moved back?
December.
Like, what are some Zoe's snoring over here? And she's going to hate me later on in the future when she says, Dad, why did you have me on there?
No, she's going to love it. She's going to love it.
Jared, what are some things you've picked up from the city that you said, man, I really like this. Let's go with good things right now. Maybe in another podcast you could say the flaws, but what are some things that you've picked up? You're like, I really like that about my city where I was born. Like, now that you're back, I'm curious to know.
Yeah, I think
kind of fresh eyes now that you come back to a different city.
I would say on a separate end of what Sammy was saying, but also together, I'm going to say something that we all know is true. Houston's hard. Mm. Yeah. And I'm not saying that like we used to say in middle school, like, oh, he's hard. No, no, no. I'm saying like it's a hard city.
That's right.
And some people think that that's bad. Hmm. But what I've seen out of the pastors is that a hard city creates hardened servants.
Yeah.
So when I say Houston's hard, it's actually a compliment because the pastors here are scrappy.
That's right.
In a lot of other cities, they don't have to partner with Loving Houston and adopt a school because there's 1,000 people that show up because they've got a solid worship leader. Mm-hmm. That don't happen in Houston.
Yeah.
There are a couple of churches that are really massive and we know them, and the Lakewoods and the Graces, and there's some really great churches.
But even then, John Osteen was scrappy.
But even then,
oh, yeah.
He was in it.
So I think just to survive in Houston, it creates a different type of spirit. And you notice that when you shake a hand. A lot of people are like, man, why did the churches kind of feel united in Houston? We're not doing it because it's cool or it makes sense. I think the churches in Houston are doing it because it's survival. I don't know how you survive on your own in a city like this. So I guess that's like kind of both questions. Like what's bad? Good. Well, Houston's hard. What's good? Well, now these people are hardened. Mm-hmm. They're not going anywhere. I met Pastor Sergio and Marshall Camp over at
Oh yeah. Yeah.
What's the name of the church?
Do you know them? Pastor, he's on the north side, actually.
Pastor Sergio.
Caruso Grace.
Caruso Grace. Yes.
Yeah.
So, been in the city.
That's right. Yeah.
Ain't left for the city. Sure.
That's right.
Lives next to, so, yeah. I don't know.
You're saying is that they got grit.
Yeah, they do.
It's the grit of the city. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. Yeah.
But I did like how you put it about survival mode, because I feel like it was survival mode for me. Pastor's kid, light complected, brown and black community.
Right.
And I didn't curse. I didn't drink. I didn't smoke. So jokes were my thing.
Right.
I'm like, I'm going to get you. You know, like, you going to curse.
I'm going to roast you. You're going to outdrug me.
You still do that a little bit too. You still do that a little bit too much.
I'm just saying, but I'm in inner city. I had to survive.
I'm just kidding.
But it was survival mode. And it was like, so I like that you put it that way, because now I get to think about, well, why did I collaborate? Because I did think, how do we reach 7.2 million people? Well, collaboration.
That's it.
I clearly can't do it alone. Yeah. You clearly can't do it alone. And neither of you can either. And the only way in Houston, like you said, in other contexts, it might be different. There might be someone that runs their city. I get it. In Houston, Texas,
can't do it.
It will take all of us.
Yeah. Pastor John, let me throw this to you, because you're having to collaborate. Obviously, you're in the city.
Yeah.
Sammy, you are, let me not go too far, but it feels like your job is collaboration. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Your job doesn't exist without collaborating with other leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Is that too far? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's one of them. But that'd be a huge. I think it's job and DNA, like just a value. Yeah. But yeah, I'm gonna agree.
And then AB, obviously you.
I don't know better. Y'all the ones that have traveled. Sure. All I knew is like I got to somehow unite the city.
Yeah.
And then Sammy would be like, oh. Across the world, we did it like this.
Yeah.
And then another dude, Elias Anacondia, would be like, hey, there's something called Man of Peace. That's what we look for in the city. I'm like, oh, now you're giving me language. And then I meet Jared, who has been in four different contexts, four different cities, you know? And he's like, hey, well, this is what I see that benefits you. So for me, I don't know what I don't know.
It's just I think it's a DNA in a person that we all have a value for that has come out in different contexts depending on where we're at.
But that's right.
To your question.
My question is, I'm throwing it to you to go, do you feel like, because obviously we see the statistics, church is declining, we're looking a whole lot more like Europe and Canada and all this stuff. Do you feel like in the coming days, pastors who struggle with doing my own thing are going to miss out on the God thing? Mm. Like, do you see that as a struggle? Do you notice it? How quickly do you notice it? And do you think that it's going to begin to kind of phase out?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think we're already seeing it. I think you already seen it. I think that you're seeing the churches that are, you know, like my people, like this is my people. This is my community. This is, you can keep going. My kingdom. Right.
Right.
My castle.
Sammy
taught me that one.
They're going to figure out.
I talk with AB about, you know, we're so busy building our own castle and we're called to build the kingdom.
Yeah. And I think that's who I picked it up from. I picked it up from AB who picked it up. I've been saying every time I preach it.
From the
I've
Lord, baby.
The last 2 months I've been Yo, we're trying to build our own.
Sammy Burini.
Come on, baby. Come on. That's the Lord. That's the Lord.
That's third hand, baby.
There we go.
You got me right.
There it is.
No, but I do see that. I think that, you know, look, for me, you know, I'm really involved in the people that God is just bringing into our ministry. I have a heart for the unchurched, you know, and
I love it.
And I think the Lord has really been, I don't want to be that pastor that's just bragging on his church, but like we have been in a good season and I'm always asking God, like, Lord, I want to steward your people well.
Yeah.
You know, like I want to make sure that we're doing your will, not my will.
Right? Yeah,
sure.
It's exciting when you're growing. It's exciting when people are coming.
For sure.
But you have to realize like this, I'm just holding the baton for a second, you
That's
know?
So good.
And
it's a different
and,
mindset.
Yeah. And, wow. and you have to realize I've been in church all my life. I mean, I was dedicated in the church right next to us.
Love it.
And I've seen that the struggle with not being able to let go, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like this is my thing. This is what I know, and I think that has created a lot of damage for people in the church.
Mm.
But when you have people that are really just they're for people, like you guys, are for the city.
Yeah,
you have pastors that are for their people, for the people that God is bringing. I think that is, that's the key to the gospel, is selflessness, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what I'm seeing a lot more.
Yeah.
In our city.
I was going to say, if anybody could do it on their own, is you. And this is why I'm going to say that. I know you'd be like, no, hold on. Grandfather, father have pastored this church.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where we're in right now.
Yeah, legacy.
In East Downtown Houston, Texas.
Yep.
Have been here when it was called Segundo Barrio. Now it's called Edo.
Edo.
Right? Mm. So you could very much take that attitude and say, bro, my grandfather really... This is the reason I'm here. I don't have to collaborate with anybody else. We're good.
100%.
We got our building.
That's true.
We're in East Downtown.
Yeah.
We don't need anything else. We're good. I'm going to steward it for the moment. My people, my community, I'm here. So just to hear you come from that place, I just want to commend you and honor you.
So true.
Yeah, that's
because special. There's people without buildings that would never think and say what you just said.
Yeah.
So I just want to honor you for that, because those are the type of people that I'm looking for.
That's right.
People that are here, boots on the ground, that will say, I love the city. I'm here. Is it hard? Yes. Has it been difficult? Absolutely. But God has called us to this region. So I just wanted to commend you for that, because I know you would never say that.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. Anyway. And from, I'll say this too, for you, for the podcast, from day one when we sat down, the burger joint that's right here.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Champ Burger.
Champ. Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Champ.
Oh, just if they're not sponsoring that, you're not supposed to say the name.
Hey, sponsor us, Champ.
Prophetic.
You just were about the city. And I think part of it, some people might jump on and listen, and maybe they're pastors. We're not saying abandon everything God's spoken to you.
Right. Yeah.
That's not what you did.
Right.
But it's about having a value for collaboration.
Yeah.
So with my group that I ran with before what I was doing, Circuit Riders, Care to Love, we go to university, high school, preach the gospel. Yeah. We have this saying on collaboration is different gifts equal sacrifice. Mm. And so I think that for us in, because we're pretty much smack dab millennial, you know, that we're in the place, our age group, of really taking leadership, honoring the fathers, multi-generational. But I think there's a value of collaboration with people. So I say, create time, create margin in your schedule. We move things for what we value. Wow. We create time for what we value.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you don't value collaboration, you're not going to have time for collaboration. Right. But if you have, at 1 hour, just, we always act like we're so busy. Just create 1 hour a week to sit with someone that you don't know. And this is what I encourage pastors at any level, senior, youth, young adult, volunteer, drive to someone else 1 hour a week and just buy them coffee and ask them questions. Mm. And you'll see, if you do that for a year, once a week, that's 52 people you'll meet. You'll be way more connected, understand what God's doing in the city, and it'll educate you for where you're going. Mm. And I think that's the part what we're all valuing. Look at this. You asked me to be on podcast, and you're like, I was like, let's hit up AB. Mm-hmm. Okay, Jay's here. Let's just sit down. This is what we want to do.
Yeah.
Because shared information is a greater breakthrough versus hoarding what we have.
Yeah, exactly. That's so good, man.
It's good.
I do want to ask you guys, since you guys are here, this whole idea of because I know Eden was on your heart, you know, when, like last year you announced it, right? And then Jared comes in. I met you maybe a couple months ago when you came into the picture with Eden, and I think this ties in well to the conversation, because you guys are co-pastoring, right?
Right.
Two lead pastors.
That's not normal. Can I just say that? That's not normal. But I think that speaks so well to what we're talking about here. Is it's not about who's lead, you know? Yeah. It's like it's Christ is the head, and we want to move in the direction that He's called us to move. So I'm interested in that.
It's incredible.
It's a great question.
You're ready for that, Jared? You're gonna.
Yeah, that's a
lot. This is what I'll say. When you let me use your church for the worship night, that was our second gathering ever.
Okay.
Jared and I were already conversating.
Okay.
And was already like stirring up about what it would look like. I'll let you share the story, though, from the get-go.
I'm kind of on pause, though, because Sammy just dropped a bar.
Oh, that was good. That was good. What did you say? Shared information?
No, he said shared information leads to greater breakthrough. I think that's a perfect.
Yeah. No, those are tongues. Interpret it for us. Yeah.
Interpret it. He said shared information. No, that's special.
Yeah.
And it leads perfectly into just that question, because I think that I asked that question because I'm seeing it all over the landscape of church. For so long, we've had my church. That's why people left denominations, and that's why they made them.
Right, right.
Because we have our thing.
Yeah.
But the Lord's breaking that down.
Hmm.
And I believe that that collaboration and unity. Mm-hmm. Everybody said we look like Europe and we look like Canada. But what I noticed is when those mainline churches, if you go study their history, when they started to rupture at the seams in both of those contexts, the reason why I think America can have a different story is because what they began to do is they closed up the doors. Mm-hmm. They tried to settle the denominations. Let's get a little bit tighter Protestant, a little bit tighter Presbyterian. Yeah. We're trying to open the doors and, mm-hmm. and collaborate. Mm-hmm. And our story was, man, somebody connected us and was like, hey, man, you need to know this guy. And I reached out to him over Instagram. We had the same church name. I had a group of people. This is going to blow your mind. There's Joe who moved from West Virginia. Jenny was already here, but she's from Honduras. And she was with us in Alabama. Christian moved on a dream. And then a guy just moved down last weekend. He's moving his entire family from Birmingham, Alabama. Because we had this idea of what Eden was supposed to look like.
You had your squad.
It was just a squad. We were like, oh, we're going to go down and just be faithful.
Yeah.
And the Lord then opened the door to meet him. Oh, what's the name of your church? Eden Church Houston. What? Okay, what's y'all's like values? Oh, mm-hmm. well, the Lord called us to really set pillars on Garden Family City. Well, hang on, because that's the word that the Lord gave me. Well, we're going to do this thing called House Church, but we're really going to call them Eden Houses. Well, now this is really awkward, because those are the exact same three things that we're called to do. And the reason why I think that that's so big is shared information leads to greater breakthrough. Mm-hmm. As a pastor who loves ministry, we love being the only one.
Right, right.
I love getting a singular vision. Yeah. I love getting a word. I love reading scripture in a way that JR couldn't have dreamt that this passage said this.
Right.
Because
it
makes me feel special.
Yeah. Right.
Because I grew up rejected and I had a hole in my heart. But if you ever get to a place where ministry feels a wound, heals a wound and Jesus doesn't, that's when it's my thing. Because now I'm looking for ministry to solve that.
Yeah, you're looking for glory.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking for the glory. And our passion from the beginning has been never touch the glory.
Yeah.
We're never going to touch the glory. Shared information leads to greater breakthrough. It was a reminder for me and a pleasant one. Mm-hmm. God was like, yo, by the way, Jared, I'm not only speaking to you. I thought that was my word. Eden Church is my word. Thank you, Lord. It's finally come 30-something years. And you finally spoke to me about my church. And the what a wake-up call.
Mm-hmm. How humbling was that?
Bro, the night I told him the only reason why I called him when I saw he had my same church name.
But you also wanted to see how far along. Like, he had a name. You're like, all right, let's see how far along this guy is.
Partially.
And you're also trying to see, like, oh, like, let's see what he's got.
Let's see who he is.
Yeah, yeah.
It was humbling for me to go, oh, I'm not the only one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a great communicator, pastor, travel speaker, you're used to being the only one.
Totally. Because
the green room only has your name on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's been beautiful, we've been doing some events together. The green room has both of our names on it. It's so incredible. It's awesome. It was humbling for me in such a beautiful way, though. I remember telling my wife, I was so upset for like 45 minutes. I was literally like, Lord, I'm done.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe it.
God, how can you do this? You give me this name, this download, these dreams.
Nobody else.
And then if somebody else.
Because the Lord gave me a prophetic word that I was going to plant with somebody. So I was already down to co-plant. But I thought that the foundation of co-planting.
You were going to bring them in.
No, I just had to know them.
Yeah, for sure.
In my mind, I was like, this is going to be like a marriage. If the Lord is going to bring me with somebody, it's going to be somebody I've known for 20 years.
Mm. Totally.
Mm. Like, I can't plant a church with somebody I don't know.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
So I wasn't thinking collaboration with somebody I don't know. I was thinking collaboration, for sure, with somebody I would trust in my life.
Totally.
So I'm like, yo, for 45 minutes, I'm throwing stuff in my house. I don't even know if I told you that. I'm throwing stuff in my house. I lay on my bed like a teenager and scream in a pillow. Mm-hmm. I was like, babe, how could this happen to us? I'm messed up. And y'all are like, this guy's whack. It was just because, yo, this was my dream.
Yeah.
My dream.
Yeah.
And the Lord checked my spirit.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the only reason why I called him was for God was like, yo, your whole ministry career, your whole life has been about doing things with somebody. Mm. You need to call and bless him and believe and hope and pray and wish that his church is 10 times more successful.
Right.
Does more. You need to just be excited to know them. And I was like, you know what? So I called him as a spiritual discipline, like to humble myself and be like, no, I'm not the only one. I'm just a guy. I just love you and I love your mission. That was the only reason why I called him.
Yeah.
Which was wild at the time. Kind of find out 8 months later I'm planting a church.
And I'll say this and I'll give it to you, AB.
Oh, good.
Like, I said shared information, and then I feel like it's almost even more taking a step further. Shared revelation leads to greater breakthrough.
Okay, now he's preaching. You know what I'm saying? I can't. You know what I'm saying? Hold on, I can't.
But here's what I would say is people listening, right? Maybe some people are listening that want a pastor. Now, you've taken over for grandpa and pops, right? Yeah. Like in the sense that you're a lead pastor. So it doesn't mean that you have a value for team. I know that. I know
that
about you.
That's right.
So you have a calling to do this, and you're facilitating that. Great. Their call is to plant together, lead. So I think it's important to know, listen to what God's telling you to do.
That's right.
Right? Right. But valuing teams, I think, is the future. Yeah. Whether you're leading yourself, and like you said, the Lord's always going to highlight, because he cares about us, our entitlements.
Yeah.
Right?
Come on.
And really touching on that. And so God will give us a revelation, right? And then we'll be like, oh, is that our revelation? Are we worried about us getting the credit? Or are we worried about God getting the glory?
Yeah, man.
And I feel like I just shared this, one of my favorite passages. I think it's Luke 5, the four men carrying the guy and busting open the roof. It says some men. It doesn't say their names. It says some men. And it says Jesus saw their faith. So they didn't, they weren't worried about like, all right, this guy's going to get healed. But first, we need to know that it's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, right? We don't even know who it was. It just says some men carried their friend and they believed for a breakthrough. Wow. They were willing to do whatever it takes. They didn't care about reputation. They didn't care about ruining the house. They pulled the roof off. Dirt's falling. Yeah. And then earlier in the passage, it says that the power of the Lord was with Jesus to heal. The room was packed, but everyone just wanted Jesus' teaching. So what's crazy is I say this all the time is that we could be standing this close to Jesus and not pulling on his healing power because we just want his teaching. But Jesus said, hey, I'm here to heal. And those four men walked up there, lowered their friend in, and Jesus saw their faith. And why did he get healed? He got healed because they didn't care about the credit and they just wanted to, they knew the time that Jesus, the power of the Lord was with the Lord to heal.
Dude, as you're saying that, I feel like the Lord is downloading on my spirit. Where are the four men in Houston who's going to pull the roof off and pull on the hem of Jesus?
Yep.
The city needs healing.
Yeah,
that's right.
That man wasn't healed without collaboration.
Totally. Yeah. That's it.
It was a collab.
It was?
It was unity.
Yep.
If one of them was like, no, let's get him through the door. All right, I'm not going to help y'all unless y'all bring him through the front door.
I told y'all.
but you know what it was? It was also humility.
That's right.
Come down to that.
I think that's the biggest, especially with pastors. You know, who's, a lot of churches treat pastors as kings, man. And
you're right.
And I mean, ministry leaders as kings. And I carry this verse in my heart, man. It's Romans 12. It's outdo each other in showing honor.
So great,
that's so good.
Like,
so great.
If there's one thing you're going to compete with somebody else in,
honor.
Compete with honor, like showing them more honor. You know what I'm saying? That puts you underneath, you know, the other person. And I think that if we're always trying to prop each other up, I mean, that's literally how you build in the kingdom of God. That's what you guys are doing. That's what you're talking about.
Mm. And you're talking to two pastors' kids.
Yeah,
we've seen what can go wrong with a co-leader. And at that point, it wasn't even a equal. It was like one above the other.
Yeah.
And we saw how messy that could get.
Mm-hmm.
So to say we've seen it, we know the difficulties that come with it, the constant humility, the daily humility that is required. To still say, I think this is what God wants to do, is wild and beyond me.
Hmm.
It's beyond me.
Yep.
Logically, it doesn't make sense.
Yep.
Historically, it's a failure. But we are believing that we're obeying the Lord today.
Yeah. That's it.
Yep.
I don't know about tomorrow. I don't know about a month from now. What I do know
is
I know what I heard
when
we linked up and I said, hey, I'm going to stand on this because I really believe it's going to make us go longer.
It's going to make us be stronger.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be able to have healthy marriages.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can go on vacation. I can go on vacation. Come on. I didn't go on vacations. You did. Come on.
Yeah.
We went on vacations now.
That's right. We do vacations.
Yeah. But you know how it was? Yeah. You know how it was when Pastor would leave us? Is everything okay?
Yeah, for sure.
It's like this tension, and then you get sick. And how many pastors do we know in the Latino community that are barely scraping
can't retire?
Can't even retire because many reasons, right? But yeah, so I'm thinking long game. I'm thinking, forget long game. I'm thinking obedience. If I die today,
that's right. Yeah.
If I die right now, after this moment, I will know that I obeyed him today.
Yeah.
Because those other things aren't in scripture.
Yeah.
Vacation's not in scripture.
Burnout. Rest is. Come on, somebody. Rest is. Pastor Jared is teaching me on Sabbath.
You could rest at the house. Those are the byproducts of healthy living.
That's right.
But what you just said to me is what we hold on to. Obedience.
Yeah.
That's right.
At the end of the day, come on.
We haven't shared that anywhere else, by the way, you know.
Yeah, can we even post that yet?
I don't even know, but we haven't shared it.
I don't even know if I was supposed to say that.
I'm going to leave that to you.
Yeah, you can do it.
Haven't shared what?
This?
Yeah.
Like in detail, the story.
Yeah, for sure.
He didn't even know, really. I mean, he knew a little bit when I introduced him. Yeah. JR Podcast, come on.
Hey, I mean.
49 minutes in.
Hey, you hear it here first, baby. Let's go.
Well, what's wild about it, too, is... I'm gonna brag on my co-pastor, my lead pastor here. When I hit him up on Instagram, there's no context to what he is in the city. You guys knew what he is because you grew up with him, you met him, and he connected you to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go on his Instagram, you don't know that he's the mayor of Houston. There's no clout. There's no I think I have more followers than him on Instagram. So in my mind, it wasn't like, oh yeah, I'm connecting with this guy who I knew nothing about him. I literally closed my eyes and said, "Speak, Lord." And I fasted and prayed. Before I didn't call references.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that that's the wise thing to do, by the way. If you're listening to this, there's a much wiser way to go about it. But for me,
you were just being obedient.
I was just being obedient. So to come to the city and realize that he is the church mafia head of Houston, Texas, was weird. It was wild to me. I'm like, who? Like halfway into it, real deal, JR. I was like, he lied to me. He didn't tell me who he was. Like I didn't know because I'm shaking hands with people in the city and they're kind of giving me a weird look. Like, oh, who is this guy? Like, is he? And I'm like, I didn't even know who he was.
He's that YG, that young general, baby.
I just showed up on the scene and said yes. But it's beautiful the way that God has knitted his story and how he's brought the city together in certain aspects. And I think that's going to continue to be a part of your call.
Look out for Pastor Jared Darby. That's all I got to say. That's all I got to say.
No, that's not what...
And that's on the record.
Listen to me.
That's on God right now. You know what I'm saying?
Come on.
Man, I think I'm excited, man. I'm excited for you guys. And I've been following closely what God is doing through Eden and
you guys are a part of it too.
Yeah, and I think you have a lot. I think you have that's such a beautiful thing to have the support of churches
in
Houston, in the backyard of where their church is, you know.
Literally.
And I think that's what makes. I can't speak to any other city, but I think that's what makes us unique is that we're actually we're cheering on.
That's right.
Church planters.
That's right.
In the very city where our churches are.
So great.
Gotta be.
That's so good. I think that's the key right there, man.
It's a new day. It's a new guard. It's time.
Yeah, bro.
It's time.
So
it's also time for me to pick up my son.
I know you gotta go.
You gotta roll.
Where do you gotta go?
I gotta pick up my son.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, thanks for jumping on for part of it.
Like look at Zoe, minutes. Her eyes open. She said, "Where am I right now?"
I mean, I close it off in 10 minutes, but yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, still going? You're going an hour and a half? I'll let you go.
We're rolling.
We're going another 3 hours.
That's right.
No, I'll have to head out too. At like, I got like 30 minutes or something.
Yeah.
No, man. But
love you guys,
lead, bro. Love you.
Hey, thanks for jumping on.
Come on.
Thank you, Zoe, bro.
Yeah, man.
Zoe,
I like it. Bye bye.
She's out,
done. Bro.
She wearing the love forces you, though. Those are clean.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll text you.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where to go from here. I don't know. I mean, the mayor just left the room, man.
Mayor could leave. Work's still going on.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly. No, man. Sammy, bro, tell us a little bit about what you're doing, man, with Love Has No Limits.
Yeah, I think I'll say this and then wherever else you want to go.
Yeah.
So we had somewhere 200 plus locations serving last April when we did One Day Houston. Yeah. And then we had, you know, tens of thousands serving the city, which was beautiful. Mm. And then we have what we call sustainable solutions. So we call it the, you know, the first flywheel is kind of like that first walk in the snow.
Yeah.
That second one, we've been able to partner with local orgs like Houston Welcomes Refugees, Riverside Project, others. But then currently right now, which I talked to you about, is in April with four other organizations. I think it's Houston Response, HCPN, which is what who just left, is doing the residency. He just shared, which was great. I think it's Acts 2, UBA.
Yes.
And then our Love Has No Limits. We're doing something in April called Good Neighbor Days, which is every Saturday of April, you could choose a regular day in the week if you're serving. And really just about showing the city post-Easter a net of the city, like kind of throwing the net out, just saying, hey, we're still serving the city.
Mm.
And so that's where I'm coming back and just continually seeing the service of the city. And so being able to be here, and then for me, because we lived here, wanting to keep coming back and steward and learn and grow and say, hey, how can we keep serving the city? Mm. So that's what I get excited about, seeing the city continually served. Love seeing people saved, plugged into churches. And so
there ever a chance for you where you plant here, man? Where you move back over here?
I don't know. Let's go. Right. I don't know if we'll be, I think Houston will always be a second home.
Okay.
I always said so, being I'm an organic Californian, meaning from the ground, born there, right? I was grown in California, not flown in, right? Not brought in. And so I got a heart for California. I never wanted to come to Texas. I tell people that. But when I came here, man, I loved it so much. And Houston will always be a second home. And so we'll always be back and forth. So we're always willing and able, whatever God says. But yeah. I think, you know, we have a heart for, we live in Huntington Beach and we love California. We believe God's doing something special out there.
Yeah.
Like he's doing something special in every city. And so
what's the biggest, I'm always curious, man. Whenever somebody comes to Houston, Texas, you know, Bible Belt, I always wonder how different that is, like the church, the culture of the church.
Yeah, I mean the Bible Belt's different, but Houston is like, Houston City is not really, it's changing so much.
Right.
Would you still say Houston is Bible Belt?
I mean, I think it's kind of like Austin is, which is
right.
You know, it's in Texas, which you have to kind of, it's very unique, you know what I mean? It's like it's surrounded by, you know, by the Bible Belt. I would say that, but
I agree with you.
Yeah, the city is unique. It's not necessarily a reflection of its whole.
I would say inside the loop, right?
Yeah,
the inside the loop is much more transforming, faster. When you get outside the loop, 20-30 minutes outside,
there's pockets.
You're back in the Bible Belt.
Yeah. I think we're running into this issue, JR, where a lot of organizations are obsessed with what Eden is doing.
Mm.
These are church planting organizations.
Yeah.
But we've had three pretty major donors say no, because they qualify Houston as a Bible Belt. Mm. And I actually did the research. The religious nuns in Houston, Texas, per capita mirror closer percentages to New York and San Diego than they do Atlanta or Dallas.
Okay. Yeah, I see that. I mean, we're talking inner city, right? We're talking in the loop, Houston. Yep.
Well, they're saying that those demographics are, they do take into account the Houston metro. So it's talking about the 7.4 million.
Yeah, the greater Houston.
Is that kind of wild though?
That is wild to me. I mean, I can understand that here, like in inner city, kind of more where I live. I live out in Spring.
For
sure. It looks a little bit different.
It's a little bit different. A little bit more.
It's more like your traditional Texas.
Yeah.
Where like Edo and it here is different.
Yeah.
But that's what I would say. I would say it totally is different. So it's still, you got like, it's almost, you got like the aftertaste still of the Bible Belt around here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not California or like New York. There's similarities in the city, but it's like kind of like a hybrid, I would say.
Yeah.
But it is changing pretty rapidly. So what's funny is they're saying, oh, we don't want to support, but it's because they're not seeing the shifting.
The shift of the city. You said this, you said, was it you or Abe who was talking about, like, this is the, no, it was you, the number one city for refugees and immigrants to come is Houston, Texas.
Yep.
Yeah.
So in other words, what you just said was that Houston is the new Ellis Island.
Mm-hmm. True.
So does our strategy and our structures and our mindsets have to change, knowing that our city is going to change at 4x that of a Dallas because of that? Mm-hmm. Do you see 100%. That being any yeah, type of...
I think you're bringing the nations to a city, and then they come to Houston, and then they'll ship out to D.C., other places. Wow. But what's so beautiful about the city is you could... I mean, it's the most diverse city in America.
Yeah.
So that's what's beautiful is you got the diversity coming, which is diversity of thought, religion, all this stuff is coming in.
Sure.
So that's the beauty of, I feel like, if you're able to adapt to it, but if you're not adapting, you're wondering why your systems and models aren't working, but it's because there's an influx of, and I like how you said it, is Houston is that new Ellis Island.
It really is.
It really is. So it's just about adding that and understanding, okay, if that's going to happen, we're making a shift. But to your question, I would say it's interesting because it still is the South.
Mm-hmm.
So around, like you said, where you live in Spring, other places, it still is that. But then you're seeing Houston change, just like you said, Austin, right? Like Austin is the city's changing, but the outskirts, it's almost like in a battle. You could see that. You know what I mean?
Have you were a pastor, right? Before? Were you
13 years.
You were a pastor for 13 years at a pretty established church. I mean, I would say
it was in a smaller, it was in a decent sized town in Alabama, but it was probably 4,000.
Okay. So what's the biggest difference going from that to planning a new church? I'm always interested in that. You know, I think taking over an established church has its own challenges.
Totally.
Right? Because you're dealing with the culture that's already there. Whereas if you're planning a church, you're maybe a little bit more, you can kind of, you're a little bit more mobile, right?
Sure.
You can adapt quickly. What's been your experience with that?
It's multifaceted. I'll just kind of zero in on one specific thing. I think the difference is how important one person is to a church plant.
Mm.
I think that's why we see so, what do they say, like 85% of new converts happen at church plants. It's because we're so desperate for one person. We don't know about 10,000 or a larger auditorium. Yeah, yeah. We just want to share the gospel to that girl at Oso. Mm-hmm. We just want to tell her about Jesus. Yeah, it's like one person matters so much. And I think that coming from an established church, I think that that's what happens to church planners, right? For me, I was at a church of 4,000 or so. I had probably 16 on staff, on my staff that I led, 14 or 16 on my staff. And what was burning me up was there was these moments where I feel like we had lost the passion for one person knowing Jesus.
Mm, right.
Like we started to exchange intentional relationships for invites to church.
Mm.
Yeah. And once that happens, I think anybody with that entrepreneurial spirit, kind of that apostolic gifting, you get restless. And for me, that's what happened. I start to get shaken up in my spirit and going, no, dude, like we're losing and people are going to hell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do we not remember that? Or do we forget?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, because our salaries are cush and, you know, we're set and we're in a small town, so you could buy land if you want to. I mean, you could live it up just by being the discipleship director or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So coming into Houston, into the city, which is home for me, but obviously it was gone for a long time, is noticing that our systems and our strategies mean so much less than our culture. And I think even big churches need to remember that.
Mm-hmm.
When culture erodes, so does evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first thing to go is the first thing that makes you anxious, and nothing makes people anxious like sharing Jesus one-on-one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I would say that's great. Probably one of the big things that we've seen.
Mm. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. I think too, for us, I think it's so easy to get comfortable, you know? I mean, and that's any organization. But I think, like, I'm an entrepreneur in spirit, you know, whenever I like to start things, you know, I love starting things, man. I love starting new business. I probably started like 10 new businesses in my life. And like, I mean, most of them not taking them anywhere, you know, but right. just starting them. It's I don't know. There's just something about it. And so whenever I think if you're starting a church, you come in with that mentality, like we're going to reach people for Jesus. Right. Yeah. And that is, and then like a, I don't know, I heard a pastor say it and I can't remember verbatim, but an older pastor, established church, kind of talking about a church plant. And I remember him saying something like, oh, they're so innocent, you know, think they're going to reach the city for Houston. And in my mind, I'm like, that's how we should always be.
Right. That's
we should
right.
always wow. have that super ambitious
right.
vision for Christ. You mm-hmm. know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I don't care if your church has been around for 100 years, like it should always be about the soul, you know, mm-hmm. of other people more so than the agenda, the program,
that's
the
right.
ministry, all of that stuff.
That's it's like, crazy. It's that just you're a, saying that.
Yeah.
That's, wow.
It's, and I think that it just gets so, I don't know. Pastors, they get hurt by ministry. They get hurt by church. They get bitter. I don't know. I think if you ever get to that point, you shouldn't be in ministry anymore.
Totally.
But I just,
would you say though that because my spiritual director asked me this question yesterday, mm-hmm. he said, what's the one thing that you want? Like if the church succeeds, everything's incredible, family, all of it. What's the one thing you want to be? And he didn't give any more context. He said, what's the one thing that you want if when you turn 65, because he's 65. And I said, I thought about it for a second. I said, I just don't want to be cynical.
Mm. Yeah.
Like if I could just make it to 65 mm-hmm. and still have the one, because that's why I chose him as my spiritual director, is because he's been on the mission field for 28 years, 30 plus years,
yeah. mm-hmm.
four different countries. He still has a wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Like church hasn't turned into an industry for him yet.
Mm-hmm.
He's not even a local church pastor. He's a missionary. Do you think cynicism is a major problem in church leadership? How many, if you could just guess, what percentage of pastors struggle with cynicism or have become cynical? Do you think it's an issue? And then
it's absolutely an issue. It's definitely an issue. I mean, I'm just throwing out a number, but I would say at least 50% are
50%.
I would say at least 50%.
50% of the pastors you talk to are cynical. You're saying that right now.
Well, not that I talk to. I mean, I choose. Wisely, I get to choose okay, who I talk to. But I think if I had to guess, just what I see on social media, you know,
wow,
how you have pastors preaching from so much anger all the time. Oh, I think that's really telling of their spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I think 50% would be that's a realistic number.
And I would say less. I mean, yes to the pastor, but it's a being cynical is a human issue, right? It's a Christian. As a Christian. So I was thinking this verse, believe it's in Galatians or Ephesians. It says, "You are running well. Who hindered you from believing the truth?"
Galatians 5.
That's it. 5:6, something like that. And I think that it's the devil's never afraid of us starting something.
Yeah.
Right.
It's about finishing well, right? What did Paul say? I finished the race. I run the race. I fought the whatever, you know. That's it. Thank you, Bible scholar. So it's
it's
good. But I think it's like it's easy to start something.
Yeah.
And it's just human nature to like get jaded.
Yeah.
And wow. to get burdened. And I think it's about the thing to keep us from that, like you said, the wonder. It's like a pastor said this. He said, "When did our awe, like awe, turn into a well? Like when did our awe for the Lord turn into a well?"
Mm.
We years ago have been praying for things we're operating in that we now complain about.
Yeah,
that's think crazy. About it. Think yeah. about it. We prayed about things, and now we're complaining about the things that we prayed about.
Shh.
We're always like, God, I want to get married. I want to have kids. Now we're complaining about our kids, complaining about our marriage. When you don't realize, like,
Sammy, hold on. I got to stop you there.
Bro. Oh, okay. Don't, go ahead. Don't.
You have a toddler. Slow down.
I just
you have a toddler.
Oh, and
you love it, but hey, stop playing.
But here's the beautiful thing about it. It's about enjoying that. It's like you always
yeah,
wanted,
so good.
I want to be married. I want to have kids. And
yeah,
then
you
you're like,
you want more. You yeah. want the
what's
next thing?
What's the next? What's the next? And so I think with the pastor issue, when you say 50%, with the Christian issue, I think it's just about, how do we keep our heart soft.
Yeah.
Because it's like life will hit you. And I think it's about staying close to Jesus.
Yeah. I honestly think that now that you're saying that, I'm going through the Rolodex of the conversations and the things that I've seen. I think it may be more.
It could be. It could very well be more. And I've had moments of cynicism.
Same.
You know?
I think we all have.
Still got more. I'm trying to continually get well, I mean, you delivered from it.
you were saying right now when you were talking, it made me think of, you know, a couple of years ago, I was asking God, like, Lord, you know, because my heart has always been for the unchurched, you know? Yeah. And yeah, I want to grow, but I don't want to grow at the expense of another church. I want to grow at, you know, at the expense of hell, you know? Wow. And so God started to send brand new people who they don't know what a Gentile is.
Right. I mean,
you have to really, for lack of a better term, dumb it down for them. Right.
Totally.
But God was bringing them in. And I'm a Pentecostal. You know, I'm a Pentecostal. This is a Pentecostal church. I was a worship leader for many years before I was a pastor.
Yeah.
You know, Pentecostals like that. You know, they like to feel the music. You like to really get into a worship service. And I remember being really frustrated one Sunday because I had a room full of brand new people and they weren't worshiping. And I'm like, God, why aren't these people worshiping? You know, like, I mean, there's the move of God is in this place. The Holy Spirit is in this place.
Come on.
The worship band is, you know, they're going off and there's people that are just standing like this. And God said, and I remember very clearly, he said, you asked for this.
Mm-hmm.
You asked for the unchurched to come in, you expect them to know how to worship.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a humbling moment for me because I was, I was on the stage looking at people and I was having this conversation, this cynical conversation with God, like, God, like, these people don't want to worship. What's wrong with them? And then he slapped me in the face, man.
He's like, you got to teach them. These are the exactly people that don't know.
He said, you have to teach them.
Yeah.
You have to be a steward.
Yep. Right?
And I mean, that's just one of many moments, right? But I think a lot of times that cynicism turns into bitterness and it's really hard to break at that point.
And I would say, like, and I know we're closing in the next few minutes, but usually unintentionally, as you grow in your faith, right, we sometimes look at it as like checkpoints, right? So we forget what we used to be like, right? Mm-hmm. Like the people that say we never should have made it, and we forget our past. And so we grow in 10, 15, 20 years growing up in church, and we sometimes unintentionally communicate to the audience that we bring in, right?
Yeah.
And so if you're intentional in your communication and you're intentional in who you want in the room, you're going to communicate in that way. So one of my favorite, I mean, a lot of people's favorite, I love Pastor Judah Smith, how he communicates because, and there's so many incredible pastors I could mention. But it's one of my values, and it's something that I've seen he does all the time, is about when you're talking about the word, you're not just assuming that people know. You're saying, hey, this is who I am. I love Jesus. This is the Bible. Even as simple as, hey, this is the Bible. We believe it's the word of God.
Yeah.
We're going to open in this. And it's explaining references that it's so easy to pass over, and we'll be able to do things. But it's being able to explain it because people, you are communicating with an expectation that lost people are going to be in your audience. But if you're not expecting lost people to be in your audience, you're going to go into the hermeneutics and you're going to go into the Greek and Hebrew. And you could still do that, but it's about explaining, hey, this is what the original context was. This is what the word. And I think that's what it is. But I'll say this and you guys could finish up. I can't shout out you enough, JRC podcast and church and what you're doing here. What you're doing not only for the church but for the city is just such a beautiful thing. And so anything you ever need, you know, we got you, we got your back, and always loving to learn from you. Jay is a new friend but feels like an old friend. Obviously Abe, known for a few years.
Yeah.
I just, that's what I love. I love being around people that love the kingdom. Yeah. And so I just appreciate you and you know, we're fam.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you, man. I think you're somebody that is real. You're genuine, you know.
Thank you, bro.
You love people, and people feel that, you know. You can always tell when somebody 100%. Has a different agenda, but nah, man, from the moment I met you, you were about the city and you were about God. And so that's the type of people I want in my corner, man. So I appreciate you coming on and just taking an hour out of your day to Of course, anytime, chat, man.
Anytime, man. And let's serve, man. Let's serve. April, you'll see it all over.
Come on.
We're gonna be serving, so it'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pastor Jared.
Yeah.
My second time meeting you, man, and getting
talking. Crazy that the second time we meet, we jump on a podcast.
I know, right?
I feel like there's going to be more, especially when Abe said for the next one. I feel like there's going to be more of these for sure.
I would love to, man. And I would also love to get you here out of church, man, and speak. I just think, you know, just hearing you speak, there's a Holy Spirit fire, man, that's wisdom right. in there, man.
I appreciate that.
I think, you know, you can always sense that.
It's funny, I think you were the first pastor I met in the city.
Really?
You know that? Like first day I was in town, AB rolled up and he was like, bro, you got to meet JR.
Yeah.
Yep. So I'm just grateful that you opened the door for me that day and showed me the church and was obviously letting us use it for the worship night. But just grateful to you. That's crazy. I'm going to have this forever. You were the first pastor I met. Like to me, you were Houston.
Yeah.
Because that was the first pastor I met in the
city. I love it.
And obviously, Abe speaks really high. Mm-hmm. Y'all grew up together. Like, that's different.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Just a lot of love for you and thankful. Even though our relationship is brand new, just been grateful for you even so far.
Yeah, brother. Yeah, I'm looking forward to a flourishing relationship, man.
Likewise.
All right, guys. Well, we'll get out of here. And thank you to Champ Burger for sponsoring.
Thanks, Champ. Thank you, Champ.
You really did. Thank shout you, Champ. Out Champ Burger.
We love you.
Shout out.
Hey, thank you for listening to the JRC podcast. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation. If you didn't, I hope you'll give it another chance. If you did, do me a favor and give me a rating and a review on iTunes by going to the JRC podcast and leaving it there. You can also help by sharing the content. That would mean a lot to me. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, head over to the website, jrcpodcast.com, and you can get in touch with me there. Have a blessed week. And until next time, peace out.